Okay, tell me the truth. How many of you have looked at the title of my sermon and said, the guy needs to go back to school? How many of you have said that, thought that? I won't say any names, but there are at least two people that work in the office who questioned my title. And do you know both of them were thinking about people who had had a little bit too much to drink? And they get lit up or something similar to that. I'm way too sophisticated to even know what they were talking about personally. But what I want to know is, how will the church be lit? If you're too sophisticated to think about that title, you might substitute lighted. Donald, would that be okay if they said lighted in the place of lit? So if you want to substitute each time I say, how will the church be lit, if you need to, you think about how will the church be lighted, okay? Now, I have been accused in the past of inventing new words. I was preaching on one occasion, and one of our English professors was in the audience, and I used the term uniquer. I said, we're all unique, but some of us are uniquer than others. And immediately, Don, I have no idea why, but an English teacher came to me and said, now that is not a word. I said, it is now. And so we sometimes get a little bit of preacher's license. Is that okay? To do some things that make sense to us, whether they make sense to anyone else or not. But the truth of the matter is, where this title came from was from an illustration that I saw. Just makes sense to me. This note says that several centuries ago in a mountain village in Europe, a wealthy nobleman wondered what legacy he should leave to the townspeople. This note says he made a good decision. He decided to build them a church. No one was permitted to see the plans. No one was permitted to come inside the church until it was completely finished. At its grand opening, the people gathered. They marveled at what a beautiful, beautiful building this gentleman had built. Everything had been thought of and included. In fact, this note said it was a masterpiece. But as the people gathered around, someone looked around and said, wait a minute, where are the lamps? It's really quite dark in here. How will the church be lit? The nobleman pointed to some brackets in the walls. He then gave each family a lamp. They were to bring that lamp with them each time they came to worship. Each time you are here, the nobleman said, the place where you are seated will be lit. Each time you are not here, that place will be dark. That is to remind you that whenever you fail to come to church, some part of God's house is going to be in the dark. See, that's not easy for us to think about. If someone who's supposed to be involved in the worship doesn't show up, for example, if we have no song leader, that would be quite obvious, wouldn't it? If we had nobody that could lead a prayer, or no one that could read a passage from the Bible, and it wouldn't be possible to have no preacher because everybody's a preacher. You all are always telling Billy and me how to do it. So everybody's a preacher, but what if the preacher didn't show up? It would be a pretty dark place spiritually. The Lord intends for every one of us, to be a great part, to be a part of a light. You, and you must think not you as a whole group, but you as an individual. You are a chosen generation. Think about being chosen by God. Boy, I remember many, many times in my lifetime being around where people were playing games and they would get captains to choose and everybody would be choosing and I'll take him and I'll take him, I'll take her, I'll take him, I'll take her. And there's Roy Sharp standing. No one chooses Roy Sharp. That's a pretty sad moment. There are some of you who have experienced that, I'm confident. But think about being chosen by God. God will not overlook you. You may overlook Him. Your place may be dark because your lamp is not lit by you being at worship or by you being, if you think much broader, you being what God wants you to be, a light, because He's called you to be a light. You are chosen. You are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, and you are chosen to bring light wherever you go. If you're not willing, how will the church be lit? There's some unbelievably talented people in this room, but some of us are not quite as talented as others. And so as we start thinking about what can I do, how can I carry this light with me? What is it that I need to think about and what is it that I need to do? Most of you have read what Helen Keller said many years ago. The story about Helen Keller is awesome. If you haven't read it, you ought to read it. You've probably seen plays or movies, but it's a moving story. Her real life is a moving story. She said, "I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something I can do." Every person in this room, accountable before God, has the ability to do something. We read about the 10-talent person, the 5-talent person, the 2-talent person, the 1-talent person. There's some people in here, you see, you're the ones that we've read about that are 10 talents, because the Bible doesn't teach that. But there's some people in this room that have so much ability. Some have a significant amount of resources from which to work. And God expects us to have our lamp lit wherever we go with whatever it is that we can do. This is a very powerful statement that was being made to God's people. In the book of Joshua chapter 23, beginning with verse 10, how powerful would it be if you believed that one man would chase 1,000? If you were getting ready to go to battle and you were a bit afraid and the person that is your leader had confidence in you and said, "One man of you shall chase 1,000. But you see, it was not altogether confidence in the man who was going to be chasing 1,000. It was the God of the man who was going to be chasing 1,000. And if you and I could get the focus off of us, those of us that have less ability than many people in this room have, we need to get the focus off of us, and we need to get our lamp lit in the way in which we can light it, and we need to be sharing the world. Sharing the world with people who are in darkness and bring them to light. And in that way, we're sharing God and we're sharing light. You see, it's not about me chasing 1,000, for the Lord your God, it is He who fights for you. God is going to help you. God is going to bless you. Sometimes it doesn't seem that way, does it? We get a good idea, or we start out to do something good. Somebody criticizes us. Somebody tells us how dumb that is. Somebody wants to trip us up and put our light out. And you know what? We let them. At school, you young folks, you may go to school excited about what a great day it is and your responsibility as a Christian, and you come upon somebody that makes fun of someone else who is a Christian or something they've said good, and you will, if you aren't very tough, you will let that person put your light out. If your light goes out at school, who's going to have the church lit at school? Because, you see, that's who we are. That's what we are. That's what we need to do. Some of you older folks, you go to work and you go and you want to say some things and people might be making fun of you or saying snide remarks about you, and you will let that light go out if you aren't careful. But at work, at school, in our trips, wherever we go, how will the church be lit if we refuse to carry our light? God promised you. God promised you. Just like he promised the Israelites. You go and you teach all nations and you baptize them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. You teach them to observe all things, whatever I've commanded you. And have you really listened to what he says? I will be with you all the way to the end of the age. We like to read, I will never leave you or forsake you. Do you believe that? When you lay your lamp down and your Christian light goes out, whatever circumstance you're in, do you believe that he will be with you always, every step of the way, even to the end of the way? You should. And so here, this passage encourages us, take careful heed to yourselves that you love the Lord your God. One person, wherever you go, has the responsibility, of having that lamp lit. And so as we think about the light of just one person, go back and read again. I read just before I came today, John chapter 6 again. Jesus had crossed the Sea of Galilee. Multitudes were following. He went to sit down with his disciples. There was no multitude there when he sat down. But he looks and he sees the multitude coming, and he raises the question to test his disciples. Where in the world are we going to get all of the bread we need to feed these people? Now, some of you who are literalists will understand that's Roy Sharp's translation, okay? That's not exactly the wording of the Bible. That's exactly what Jesus is asking. Where in the world are we going to get bread to feed all of these people? Oh, and Philip says, wow, that's going to take 200 denarii. That's going to take a lot of money, a week's salary or more to buy bread enough for all of these people. And then good old Andrew, just one person who started thinking, there is one little boy who has five loaves and two fish. That little boy, how significant was he? Five loaves, two fish. Not enough to feed a family sometimes, depending on the size of the family. If it's a family the size of mine, it wouldn't have been quite enough. We'd have been fighting over the fish, I can tell you. But here's a little boy with five loaves and two fish. Andrew saw that. Andrew, one guy, started thinking, hey, this is what we've got. Jesus said, bring that to me. Sit the people down, divide them into groups, and we will take care of it. Jesus gave thanks. He began to break the bread, to give pieces of fish, and wow, one little boy. Have you got five loaves and two fish with you tonight in some kind of spiritual sense? Have you got anything that could be used to honor and glorify God, to give him place? Are you thinking one man can feed 5,000 people, one little boy can feed 5,000 people, not because of the amount of food he had, not because of the power of the little boy, not because Andrew was the one who started thinking, but because God is big enough to do what needs to be done. And the Bible teaches us that God will do it. If you go back to 2 Kings chapter 5, there was one little girl. The Syrian army had taken some Israelites captive, and one of those was a little girl, a young girl, a slave girl, who was waiting on the commander of the Syrian army's wife. She had to be a sweet and thoughtful little girl, because the text says she said to her mistress, "Oh, if my Lord were with the prophet in Israel." Was Elisha such a big deal? Well, he was to the people, but it wasn't because of Elisha. It was God working through Elisha. And so she started moving this gentleman, this commander of the Syrian army, a super powerful army. He was a leper. This little girl wanted him to be cleansed. And so she said, "What about the prophet?" One little girl. She couldn't do anything, right? She was a slave. She was able to point this man to God through the prophet that was in Israel. You remember the story well. I was looking, and I'd never noticed this before, but there's a note in my Bible here about the amount of silver and gold that was being sent to the king of Israel in order to try to get Elisha to heal Naaman. And the note said the amount of money was worth $3,800,000. That seems unthinkable to us, doesn't it? But here's a bunch of silver and a bunch of gold and some clothes. You take this and you go to the king. Well, the king thought it was a ploy to get at the kingdom of Israel instead of a legitimate request for Elisha to help Naaman. But the story works. Naaman finally, after being encouraged by his servants, he was incensed that they would ask him to go dip 7 times in the Jordan River. He begins to say, "Well, look at the rivers here. Aren't they better? They're cleaner. They're nicer. Why can't I dip here?" He finally is encouraged by his servants. "If you were told to do something great, you would have done it. Why don't you go do this simple thing that you're being asked to do?" Was the power in the Jordan River? No, it wasn't. Was the power in the one little girl? No, it wasn't. The power was in the God that the little girl trusted in, that led her to believe in God's prophet Elisha. And it was God's power through this man listening and doing what he was asked to do that brought about his cleansing. But one little girl starts the action that cures this man of his leprosy. And then, if you look at the book of Esther, just one woman. That sounds awful, doesn't it? Just one little boy, one little girl, and now we come to one woman. Just one woman saved a nation. The nation was going to be destroyed unless something were done. Mordecai, who had raised Esther, said, "You've got to go to the king." She said, "I haven't been called. And if you go to the king and he doesn't raise his scepter towards you, you would be put to death." But it was a very important job this one woman had to do. God had already blessed her above all the women in that great province. And now, here in verse 14, this very famous statement. When we think about who knows, yet who knows? Esther didn't know. She was afraid she would be put to death. She didn't know. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? The nation of Israel, God's people, needed somebody. It was just one woman, but she was instrumental in saving a nation. And then one man. One man, this is hard for us to think about. One man becoming instrumental in keeping mankind from becoming extinct. When I read Genesis 6, as I teach the Genesis class, it just blows my mind to think that God could say that every thought and intent of man's heart was only evil constantly, continuously. Now, surely there was some good thought. Surely there was some good deed, some good action that would be performed by a mom toward a little baby or a grandpa toward a precious grandchild. Surely there was something there that was good. But the evil in the world was so overwhelming that God decided, this is it. I have had all I can take of man's evil. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Did Noah deserve to die too? Yes, he did. Or it would not have taken grace. He didn't deserve what he got. His sons didn't deserve what they got, nor did any of their wives deserve what they got. But God's gift to you and me was the preservation of humanity. And here we are tonight. One man. Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations. Noah walked with God. That would mean when Noah went to school, guess what? He carried his lamp with him. When he went to work, he carried his lamp with him. When he went on vacation, he carried his lamp with him. If he were working in his garden, he had his lamp with him. How is the nation of Israel, God's people, which is the church in the Old Testament, if you will, how would God's people, Noah's family, how will the church be lit? You see, through the centuries, one little boy, one little girl, one woman, one man makes all the difference in the world. Those are neat stories, aren't they? I've enjoyed reading all of those stories from when I was a little boy, even up to this very day as I read them again. But you know, those stories are meaningless unless I choose to carry my lamp. The church will not be lit without me and my lamp. Because you see, there are going to be some times when I'm the only one around who knows what the Lord teaches, who understands how important it is that we stand up and we show the world the light that God intends for us to see. We sang songs tonight about the Lord letting His light shine upon us. Oh, He's done that. The glory of God is all around us. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows His handiwork. The fact tonight that we can talk about the grace of God and salvation through Jesus Christ indicates that God's light has shone upon us in amazing ways. But we still have to decide, will I carry my lamp with me, and will it be lit? What you have to ask is, will my place, I put on there your, but it should read my. Because you see, sometimes I don't get it done in the way that I should. I'm not always as forward with the gospel as I need to be. I don't teach it in the way that I need to teach it sometimes. And my lamp goes out and I am not exactly what I need to be. And so I listen to Jesus again tonight as He pleads with us. And I should read it this way. Let my light so shine. Let it shine in such a way before men. You see, it's okay for people to know that you're a Christian. It should not be embarrassing. It should not be overwhelming. It should not be that you don't want to embarrass someone by talking about the Christ. You don't want to hurt some people's feelings. Let your light so shine. Let it shine in such a way that they may see in you good works. And if you do it in the right way, God will receive the glory. Paul wrote to the church in the city of Ephesus in chapter 5 and verse 8, "You were once darkness." You were darkness. What a sad day. But if you read Ephesians 2:12, they were without a holy nation. They were without God. They were without Christ. They were without hope. They were once darkness. What about you tonight? Are you walking in darkness because you've never had your lamp lit? You've never been born into the family of God. You've been walking through life in darkness. You've never, ever decided to let your light shine in such a way that God could be glorified because of your good works. You've never been born into the family of God. That can be remedied by you tonight, by the power of God, by the grace of God. There's nothing that anybody in this room has done but that God would see you coming afar off, run to meet you, give you His grace and mercy and love and compassion, and forgive you when you do what He asks you to do by being buried with Him, telling Him you want to turn away from sin and you want to turn to Him. You want your light to be lit. One of the sad things in life is to see people who've been so faithful in the past, whose life has been so good, so challenging in terms of them showing good works before God, but the world tumbles in on them in some way and their light goes out. There may be somebody sitting in this room tonight whose light has gone out. Turn back to the Lord. And let your light shine before men who will see that the church is lit in the world. If this group of people went out every day being the light that God would have us to be, letting His light shine on the world as we teach His great word, what a blessing it would be to the world. So tonight, as we think about this song, God is always calling us and wants us to come to Him. If you need to come, listen to the song, listen to God, and come as we stand and as we sing.